the road to the Royal Rumble, which technically means that we're on the road to WrestleMania here at the beginning of 2021. And that means that it's time for another retro review podcast here on the Barber's Chair Network. My name is Chris Novak. I'm joined, of course, by Rob O'Neill and our friend Chris Osborne. Today, we'll be starting our series of either two or three episodes, I believe, of retro Royal Rumble reviews. I want to confirm that. Two or three?
Three, yes.
Okay, three. Cool.
And also zero for February because there's no historic good pay-per-views in February.
Correct,
except
yeah.
Final Four, which we already covered.
We
might branch out into other promotions. Who knows?
That's true.
You never
That's
know.
True. Never,
never, never know. Never know. You never know. But yeah, so, you know, we're going to be talking about two Royal Rumbles that happened in the 1990s. We'll leave that for a little bit later. For now, though, we're going to touch on something that's relevant at this exact moment of recording here on Saturday night. Technically, it is tied into the Royal Rumble because the Royal Rumble nowadays, of course, tells you who's going to WrestleMania. And there is WrestleMania news afoot. There was a report from Fightful a few days ago that said that WrestleMania was set for April 11th, 2021. The location was not named. However, on Saturday night, about an hour or so ago, I want to say, we found out that not only will it be occurring on April 11th, it will also be occurring on April 10th. That's right. They are doing a two-night Mania again. However, it will not be at the Thunderdome. It will be in Tampa. It will be at Raymond James Stadium, where, of course, WrestleMania 36 was supposed to take place before the COVID-19 pandemic began and swept that into the abyss, into the shadow realm, as it were. But not only that, a rarity actually occurred here. Usually, when we find out WrestleMania locations, you know, you only get one.
Yeah.
You get one per year, and then in the lead-up to the current one, you find out where it's going to be next year. We found out three locations for the next 3 years.
Yeah, they went Super Bowl style.
They did go Super Bowl style on it, and it did occur. It was either in a commercial break for Football Night in America or on the Fox NFL post game. I don't know. I saw two tweets. One said it was on NBC. One said it was on Fox. I'm not sure was anybody. Chris, I know you were obviously watching the Packers. Did you see it on Fox or?
I didn't see it on Fox. I saw the NBC one, and then I saw just like the actual run with the Stephanie and Triple H thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Just their social.
Yeah.
But I didn't see anything on Fox, but maybe it was there.
Okay. Well, we'll say it was on NBC then, which makes sense because it ties into their NBC Universal deal. But yeah, they went Super Bowl on us. So on April 3rd, 2022, they will be the next edition of WrestleMania. WrestleMania 38 will take place at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Jerry World gets WrestleMania again for the second time since 2016, where I hear they're still running WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And then on April 2nd, 2023, the WrestleMania that was supposed to take place in 2021 is happening then. It will be at SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, California, of course, suburban Los Angeles. And also, it should be noted that there will be fans at WrestleMania 37. And in the next couple of weeks, there apparently will be information about ticket sales.
Well, they plan for there to be fans. Don't say there will be fans.
They plan for there will be fans.
Well,
let's be.
We'll see how things go.
It's Florida. They'll be fair.
It's Florida. Come on,
that's
man.
That's fair. That's fair.
It's Florida. It's Maine. People are going to jump at this opportunity. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, immediate reactions. You know, do you like the idea of them naming locations like this? Should they do this more in the future? Yeah, like I said, I'm just going to open it up. What do you guys think?
No, I like this. I mean, you might as well. It is pretty much, you know, your Super Bowl. You might as well treat it like that. And you know, I know they do like a year in advance for some other shows, but yeah, why not? If you have everything hammered out and, you know, contracts with all these places, which they clearly do. Yeah, I mean, let people start planning in advance, you know, saving up, you know, knowing where they're going to have to go, knowing how much they're going to have to save up is important. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I agree. I think it'll help a lot, especially with for the international folks. You know, hopefully when everything clears up, you know, and they can sort of plan where they're going to be going, if they're going to go to the Dallas one or they're going to go back over to California. My only thing was I was really hoping for Vegas. I think it would be a terrible thing for me in my bank account, but that is the one, like, mania I would definitely be going to. I would book it the next day. That was the only thing I was a little saddened about, because with that new stadium in Vegas, it's just ready for mania.
Yeah, and I think it's only probably a matter of time before they end up out there. Atlanta as well. I know we've been saying that
for
a few years.
But the good news with Atlanta is that they're not up for the Final Four in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
So the opportunity for Atlanta to get a mania is absolutely there. They just have to hammer it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're not getting Final Four until at least 2027.
Yeah.
And the only thing I had, not really an issue, but it's just, you know, we've done these two places or very close by very recently in terms of manias and also big events.
Yeah.
You know, I do wish they would spread the wealth a little bit more. I know some people were saying, you know, oh, you know, New Orleans, it's like, well, you just had two in the past, like, 7 years or whatever, so
yeah,
you know, we don't have to go back there every time. But you know, Minnesota, I know it always been like was always rumored as one of the final places, the destinations that could get it.
Yeah.
And we're still without that too, so.
Well, and you know what the thing is about that is, you know, they going back to like the Hoosier Dome one, because not a lot of people came, is they want to keep mania in cities where, you know, it'll be an attraction, but it's a big enough attraction on its own at this point where,
yeah,
you know, you can get people. I don't know what a flight necessarily looks like from, you know, London or whatever to Minneapolis.
If yeah.
That could deter someone, but on the whole, I don't think losing out on too many people that wouldn't be willing to go up there.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, they could move it at this point to wherever instead of sticking with the same 7 or 8 cities. And then WrestleMania 40, you know, maybe they go back to the Garden, even though they didn't for 30, but
they'll probably do MetLife again. Nah. To be even though, honestly, I don't think that they should do MetLife again.
MetLife's bad, and
there's still people outside of MetLife, aren't there?
Yeah,
they're outside of MetLife and not in Dallas too.
Right? Honestly, like not even. Just, I know that the sentiment is there for the, you know, the round number, but like you were just there 5 years ago, man. You don't have to go back because they did the same thing with Nola in 30 and 34. Go to Vegas. Go to shit. I mean. I know Levi's is a terrible venue to get to, but you can go to Levi's.
Well, 4 years from now, there's probably going to be another brand new stadium.
There probably will be. Yeah, you can do.
Maybe Toronto has theirs by then.
Maybe Toronto has theirs by then. Yeah, I mean.
I can't think of any. Other.
I can't think
maybe
of anything.
Oakland has a new one.
Yeah, maybe Oakland has a new one. I don't know. You can. There's other places that they can go.
Yeah.
So, okay. So next question before we go into the Rumbles. This is, like I said, this is a two-night mania. What do you guys think about this? Because I personally love the idea of it, especially after last year, especially after all the condensed shows this year. I did not think there was a chance in hell that they could have convinced people to once again watch a 7-hour show after throwing these condensed shows at you for the last year. I'm glad that they're doing this again. I think that this opens up a lot of possibilities for everybody on the card and everybody who can get a fair shake here. What do you guys think about them doing two nights? And do you also think that there's a possibility, even though they have one night booked for 2022 and 23, that they could switch that and go to two if this works out?
Yeah, I mean, you know, off the bat from a viewing perspective, you know, viewing at home, I love it being two nights.
Yeah.
You know, two nights of 3 or 4 hours or whatever compared to one night of, you know, 7 hours. From an in-person standpoint, you know, let me tell you, the 7, 8 whatever hours we ended up being there, it's rough. You know, it's a lot. You're outside the whole time. I mean, it really beats you up. So I didn't think I would like, you know, a two night back to back because it's kind of a lot, but it's not really. I mean, it's the same as if you're gonna do like SmackDown and then Takeover and then a pay-per-view or whatever.
Exactly.
You know, so I mean, there's the obvious question about, you know, what happens with TakeOver if they do two nights? What happens with the Hall of Fame? I mean, who cares about the Hall of Fame? But I think this is something that we talked about. I think even before all this last year, we talked about eventually going to two nights before they even did go to two nights. Because it's a topic that always comes up around Wrestle Kingdom. And there's more and more evidence to do it. You know, you can sell two-night tickets, and you'll sell plenty of those where people get the same seat both
times. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
for some sections, and some sections are just, you know, because there's always a ton of tickets left for WrestleMania, or a good amount of tickets left for WrestleMania, you know, for walk-ups and secondary the day of. So people will buy any sort of ticket pack you put out there. You just have to get a little creative with it, maybe.
Yeah, I'm all for two nights. As long as you're keeping the show still, like, it's got to be like 3.5 or under to me for hours. Like, it can't be just like 4 or 4.5 hours. Like, if you're just making them, you know, if you're just taking a whole 8, 8.5 hours, if you're just adding more and more, then even splitting into two nights is not enough for me. But for a viewing perspective, I'm all fine for two nights. I think that's probably the way to go. And, you know, at least with, you know, Wrestle Kingdom has the unfortunate thing now with, like, you know, they did the first year, and because they had to double champ to crown on night two, where, like, this one didn't seem to go as well, I don't think, like, at least the build up to it. And it felt like the nights were, the rest of the card was a little uneasy, and that could be due to not being able to get everybody in for the shows. But Mania is so, like, their roster is so deep, and you have so many potential matchups that splitting into two nights makes sense.
Yeah, and I think they did a good job splitting it this year. I think night one was a little bit better, but it wasn't, like, so much better to an extent that it looked unbalanced.
No, just,
you know, there were a couple matches on night two that went long
and I mean, out, but to be fair, with this past year, to be honest, most of the card was thrown together just because it had to be. Mm-hmm. So it was a good litmus test for watchability. But I don't think it was a good litmus test for, like, a fully stretched out card that's going to be built up like this. And we're a situation where they had to have it, you know, like, as in have, like, you know, split it on the fly. Right now, they know that they have to do this in January. They have 3 months to prepare for this, so they can add enough intrigue to both nights to the point where not one is going to look lopsided from the other. Yeah, so I will say also with regards to TakeOver, I think there's two options for them that can work if they do two nights going forward. I think the first option is Thursday to start off the weekend. You do Thursday night and you get the party started that way, then you do SmackDown, and then you do Saturday, Sunday for Mania. Or I think the second option, and I think that there's and I'll go on my justification about it later, start off the afternoon on Saturday at like noon with TakeOver, get yourself a break for 5 hours or so, then they start the pre-show for Mania, and then you start the main card at 7 for night one.
Well,
my justification for that is that people go to indie shows when they're at Mania weekend at like noon or early in the morning, and then they don't care, then they move on to the next one. But
the difference is in your proposal, you're intentionally competing with yourself to an extent.
Technically, yes, you are, but at the same time, it's like 20,000 people at an arena, or like 15,000-18,000 versus, you know, however many that they decide to do at Raymond James or any of these other stadiums.
Yeah, I will say you have enough. I'm assuming even with fans in there, they're not going to be able to have a full capacity anyways.
No. Yeah.
So obviously, no, like, not. You could have fresh people at all the shows combined, like, considering that, like, not everybody will be making it to all of them, and you'll have people pick and choose.
That's fair. I mean, I don't know. There is a human element though, too, where, you know, someone has to go sit through a 3-hour takeover and then another 4-hour WrestleMania, you're going to get wiped out.
That's the decision. Like, do you want to do that, or do you want to do the other things? It's no different for me. It's no different from making the decision of, oh, do I want to go to Access or do I want to go to TakeOver? Do I want to go to Access? Do I want to go to SmackDown?
Yeah.
Or also, do I want to go to Access or TakeOver when it's happening at noon, or if Access is happening at that time of day, even if it's not this year, it's in the years to come. I don't think it's that big of a deal. If you start off the day with that, it gets everyone warmed up for it. It's a nice appetizer, and you move into Mania later that night. There's enough excitement during the days where people are going to tune in and they're going to watch.
That's true.
And they're going to want to watch early in the day. It doesn't matter to them. They know that people will watch wrestling at any hour of the day. That's why they do the international shows and whatnot. So to them, it's no people who are going to watch NXT are going to watch the show if it's on at noon on Saturday.
No, and I agree. I'm just telling you, you know, if we're in Dallas and takeovers, you know, at the American Airlines Center, and then you have to go all the way back out to Arlington, you're looking at, you know,
well, like, yeah, I mean, that's a drive. Yeah, and like I said, and that's
you're making more traffic.
But there's, I think there's a finite amount of people still, and the NXT viewership audience tells me that there's a finite amount of people who will favor that to doing the main roster show, and I don't think that will have a heavy impact on things. But that's why I said Thursday is a possibility too. And all this is also telling me is that, kick the Hall of Fame aside, do something else with it.
Yeah, we still don't have an answer for how will the Friday Night SmackDown impact, you know, the Hall of Fame that whole weekend, because we never got to see it.
No, yeah, exactly.
So
we have no answer yet whatsoever.
Just put the Hall of Fame, I don't know, make, because usually NXT, you can run like, just have NXT not do a big four, like a takeover on a big four weekend. And then just put it on a Saturday if you want fans actually there with them, which I personally don't need fans for a Hall of Fame. It should just be all the wrestlers and have like a banquet dinner, make it like the old like Slammies and the old Hall of Fame. Like, I don't need thousands of people who are just there to be, you know, dicks.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole time. So, but yeah,
I agree with that. But I will say with regards to the takeover at Big Four weekends thing, I don't think it's quote unquote necessary. However, I will say, I think there was a very tangible effect to them not running a takeover last January during the Royal Rumble weekend, because I was at Worlds Collide, and that compared to takeovers at Big Four weekends that I had been to even 2 months prior at Survivor Series, it was night and day.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't necessarily the talent's fault. It was just the fact that, you know, the atmospheres were completely different.
Well, yeah. I mean,
oh, and I agree with that. I would just not run any show that's an NXT brand one on one of the weekends.
Yeah.
And put the Hall of Fame on that Saturday. That way it's done. And that way NXT can run a different show. You know, go while you have NXT UK. So I would have said go to the UK to do a takeover, but I mean, you can go over to Australia or, you know, some other market that you haven't had a takeover at and put it on their own separate one during one of those weekends or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think that after the last couple of years, I almost think that it's a situation where I don't know if they would risk necessarily losing people to come that weekend, but they would definitely, it definitely would feel different for people at this point with takeovers and Mania and Big Four weekends.
Yeah.
It's sort of become part of the experience.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Anywho, it's time to talk about Royal Rumbles.
Yes.
And for our first one is one of the more famous ones, of course, and that would be the 1992 Royal Rumble. This one is famous, of course, because it was the first Royal Rumble where the winner of the Royal Rumble match became the World Wrestling Federation champion, because the title was vacated. I, of course, was born during the time that it was vacated. So when people ask who was the WWF champion when you were born, I always say vacant.
He had a lot of reigns.
Yeah, exactly. you know, it became vacant because Undertaker won it from Hogan, and then Hogan won it back, and then, you know, they had a situation with some shenanigans involving Ric Flair. You know, it's kind of a good way how they got it to be vacant, I guess. It's always weird. I know we talked about it before, how Undertaker had a week-long title reign and then went 6 more years without winning the title back.
Yeah.
But yeah, from Knickerbocker Arena, which, not where you would expect, you know, an all-time great show, but they also had what other pay-per-view did they have? They had a pretty big one. I'm trying to remember it now. It was one of the... Why can't I remember it now?
I think it was one of the I think it was either one of the Survivor Series or the SummerSlams.
Yeah. But anyway, we do have a couple things from the Observer here. Let me get into that.
Go ahead.
Real quick. Because the beginning of 1992 is an interesting time, because it's kind of when all the steroid stuff is starting to come out. So that'll be a big story for the next couple of years. Let's get into it here. Yeah. So from the January 6th Observer Inside Edition, stemming from lengthy interviews with Billy Graham, David Schultz, and David Schultz's daughter, subject of anabolic steroids, and Hulk Hogan was scheduled to air this Friday. Behind the scenes in wrestling, the story has been viewed as having potential for a significant impact and possible embarrassment for the World Wrestling Federation and Hogan himself. Well, I mean, you know, they obviously ultimately go to trial, and Vince ends up winning mostly because Hogan more or less turns on the government. But it does become really the big story of the early 90s where, you know, we got to crack down on steroids. So it's kind of interesting. That's a
big, and it makes Vince change, like, his whole who the top guy is going to be and who what they're going to look like. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because they kind of go anti-steroids for a while, and it leads to, you know, Brett getting his shot on top and then Shawn Michaels eventually getting a shot on top. And that's not something that really would have happened in the 80s. What this will all mean to Hulk Hogan, the World Wrestling Federation, and pro wrestling in general remains to be seen, according to Dave, which is correct. I mean, it takes a couple of years before it really shows its full effect. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting that if the WWF even responds to what will be alleged, they'll go on the attack against Billy Graham and D. David Schultz, which they do. There'll be more lawsuit news, which I know we talked, I don't remember when we talked about it. We talked about it pretty recently, where Jesse Ventura is suing Vince for his likeness in the old pay-per-views and Coliseum videos.
Oh, yeah. I don't know which one we did, but yeah, he's, I wonder what, like, his contract must have been, because I'm sure Ventura probably had an agent.
Yeah.
Unlike many of the other personalities at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this probably was something that Vince just like didn't even think about. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean you're suing me for this? Like, everybody else can't.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of weird how many people have sued Vince and still end up like being back on his good side. Which I think Jesse Ventura ultimately probably is. I mean, they worked together a couple more times. You know, Hogan obviously. Even Brock sued him.
Sable.
Yeah.
Sable sued him.
I mean, it's really weird, but
no, nobody's ever gone for good, or nobody's ever in the bad graces.
Everybody exactly. Can show back
It's one big family.
I thought this was interesting. On December 4th, 1991, they ran a house show at the Aloha Stadium, which not somewhere they've ever ran since then, and never run again. It's also condemned now. Do you see that a couple weeks ago?
No. Yeah,
it's a condemned building now, which isn't good because it's where Hawaii plays their football game still.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a problem. There's an awful lot of speculation that Lex Luger won't be around WCW much longer, but it's hard to imagine anyone walking out on that kind of contract. Well, he does.
Yeah, he's going to be the WBF, right? That's starting up soon.
Yeah, and we have a little bit more on that from the next Observer here.
I actually totally forgot about that because I was just thinking, it's like, oh yeah, Mania 8, and that's they do like the little interview during that show.
Yeah. So going to the Observer from January 10th here, Lex Luger officially gave notice to WCW that he'd be finishing up at the February 29th pay-per-view. His contract doesn't expire until March of 1992, but he's expected to be given a limited release with a no-compete clause within America, which kind of happens. You know, like Chris said, he goes to the WBF, and then once his contract finally ends with WCW, he makes his way onto WWF television. So that's kind of a good workaround, I guess, is to get him in the WBF, even though I don't think he ever ends up doing much there. But
yeah, I was going to say, because when does he start actually wrestling though for WWF?
That is a good question.
That is a very good question, actually. Because
it's definitely not March. Or is it? Let's think. I'm trying to think of all the pay-per-views. Because he's not there at SummerSlam. He's not there Survivor Series.
I guess they had him on Superstars No, it's March 1993, so he still has a year left on his contract.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because I think, the release or something was, I think it held him for, like, a whole year. yeah, like a limited release. So that's what they, yeah. Because if I remember, I think he had like a year contract with the WBF, like the 1 year deal.
Yeah, because his release, it was like I said, it was a non-compete only in America, so he could go wrestle in Japan, but WWF brought him in to work with the WBF as kind of a workaround.
Okay. But until March of 93.
Yes, and then wow, he faced Kurt Hennig at WrestleMania.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy. For a guy like, I mean, Luger, I think I've said this enough on the Starcade ones, like Luger just doesn't do anything for me ever.
Yeah. You know,
$1 million look, but like two left feet don't matter.
Yeah. Elsewhere, the Nasty Boys were injured out of the ring on Sunday night because someone pulled up to their car when they were driving to the hotel and threw something at their car. And then Jerry Sags and Brian Knobbs got up and beat them up.
Jesus.
And then Brian Knobbs ends up getting stabbed because of it.
Jesus.
Oh, that's why Knobbs isn't in the Rumble.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's like four on two, and the Nasty Boys are fighting them, and Knobbs ends up getting stabbed, and then Jerry Sags gets hit in the head with jumper cables.
Mm. Jeez.
The guys that beat him up get arrested, and then they're like, oh, it was self-defense, but these guys didn't have like any marks on them, so they actually beat him up pretty good. Mm. Not good.
Not good. That. Not good at all. Good Lord.
Yeah. And then continuing on, we got a couple more observer notes here just to get in the 1992 mindset. Newcomers as far as WWF television goes are Tatanka, who will start as a babyface, and Papa Shango. So got those two coming in soon. You know, that'll be good. Everyone is raving about the Rockers angle that aired over the weekend on Challenge, because this was when Shawn Michaels threw Marty Jannetty through the window.
He was trying to jump out the window.
Really, just. It's a classic.
I knew he was going to do that.
Heenan was on some sort of heater in this month. Like,
he really this, was.
Man.
Okay. Now, with all that, we can get into the Royal Rumble.
We sure can. Started off with our classic Vince pay-per-view intro.
It did. I didn't clip it, but
over the
it goes
top.
Over everyone.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. We still need like Bruce Pritchard to do it. Just do an impression like of it. They should do this for NXT. You brought back In Your House. Like, just do like a nostalgia style like presentation show.
Yeah, no, I'm here for it.
Amazing.
And then Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan are our hosts tonight. Probably the best night of commentary that the company has ever had. Just on fire the entire time.
Yeah.
And we start with the Orient Express against the New Heart Foundation. So it's Jim Neidhart and Owen Hart.
Man, what the hell were they wearing? That's what stood out to me. What the hell were they wearing?
Yeah. I like... Bobby Heenan was like, oh, did they just wake up? Why are they still in their pajamas?
Seriously, though.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it was good. Owen is very good. That's clear.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Clear forever, pretty much. They do talk about how Bret Hart lost the Intercontinental title over the weekend, wrestling with 104-degree fever.
Jesus.
We'll get more into that later.
Yeah.
Also, Bobby Heenan said he wrestled with 113-degree fever. 104 is no big deal. Yeah. So Orient Express gets a little momentum going when Mr. Fuji hits Owen with his cane, and they hot tag Jim Neidhart, and he cleans house, and then Owen and Neidhart get the win after the body slam, top rope splash. I don't know. It was kind of long.
Yeah.
You know, probably
17 minutes or so.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Cut like 5 minutes from it, it would have been fine. But yeah, I mean, everybody is so in awe of Owen at the time. Like the pops from the crowd just when he does, just like he'll do random hurricanrana spots, and then he jumps from the ring all the way to the top rope, and then does the deep arm drags and the hurricanranas from there. It's like it's just so much stuff that this audience has never seen before.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Alfred Hayes goes over the situation from Springfield, where Brett wrestled with 104-degree fever and lost the Intercontinental title to the Mountie. Mountie beat down Brett after the match, and Roddy Piper came in to save him. So Roddy Piper has a title match tonight now.
He does.
Sean Mooney's with Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart says that Brett's not sick with the flu. He's sick from losing to the Mountie. Mountie wants to know how Piper's qualified to just jump in for a title match. Piper votes. Yeah, you know it is. Piper is also in the Royal Rumble, so he's got a chance to win two titles later.
Yeah. Yes.
First man who could do it one night.
Yes. We move on to the Mountie against Roddy Piper for the Intercontinental title. Piper wins the sleeper hold. Only took like 5 minutes.
Yep.
And then Jimmy Hart tries to hit Piper with a cattle prod, and Piper gets it and hits Mountie with it.
That buzzer noise, whatever they use, like put over the recording, it's just like, really?
Right. Oh, yeah. No, and I always thought like the one they did on Goldberg and WCW was loud, but this one was like just clearly into the mic from somewhere.
My big thing too is like, I think this is when Hart, isn't this when Hart tries to leave for WCW?
It is. We have more on that in a little bit.
All right.
Yeah, Coliseum exclusive, which it's weird that those are included on the network, especially because the one later kind of spoils the match. but Alfred Hayes has an interview with Hulk Hogan, who says he's going to win the Royal Rumble. You know, good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
The Bushwhackers are in action against the Beverly Brothers. Lanny Poffo reads a poem. He kind of sucks. This went 15 minutes.
Oh,
it stunk.
This is like the looking at it, and then the next match too. It's like the tag team wrestling of this era is so terrible. Like this WWF tag team division is the like one of the worst.
Yeah. And I really don't mind the Beverly Brothers or the Bushwhackers, but you could have cut this match like 10 minutes off of it and it would have been fine.
Yeah, I don't need any Bushwhacker match to go over like 6 minutes.
No, let them get in and, you know, do their shit and get out. Gene Okerlund is with the Legion of Doom. They are quite loud.
Yeah.
You know how
that's
it goes.
That's what they do.
They're very
that's
cool.
What they do.
We have the Natural Disasters against the Legion of Doom for the WWF Tag Team Championships. And Legion of Doom lose by countout because they're all brawling outside the ring, and Typhoon gets back in before the count. I mean, that's fine. It makes both teams look good and, you know, continues your feud. So,
yep.
Yeah, why not?
It works. It works. I mean, you know, you weren't expecting the Road Warriors, Legion of Doom, whatever you want to call them, to lose the titles here. So they did what they had to do here. I enjoyed this for what it was.
Yeah. Shawn Mooney is with Shawn Michaels. They go over Michaels turning on Jannetty. Michaels said he actually saved Marty 29 other beatings in the Royal Rumble. Says he's going to leave as WWF champion tonight because he's the hottest thing WWF has ever seen. Yeah, I mean, this is the start of his run, really, because by the end of 1992, he'll have the title match. So,
yeah. Exactly. So, you know, we move on now to the Royal Rumble match for the World Wrestling Federation Championship. I think they did a neat little job of hyping it up throughout the night with all the promos and vignettes and whatnot. And then right before, you got rapid fire stuff, which was, you know, it worked for me. And so, you know, we got in here. Jack Tunney was there. The fans do not like him. Fans do not care for President Jack Tunney. And so we began with our number one and number two entrants, which were the British Bulldog and Ted DiBiase.
Yeah. And, you know, they were able to fight for a little bit. Good way to start. Bulldog eliminates DiBiase before number three even comes out.
Yeah.
Which clears the ring for Bulldog against Ric Flair. Ric Flair obviously drew number three.
And Gorilla Monsoon made sure to point out that nobody has ever, from one through five, has ever been there at the end.
Yeah. You know what? It's not fair to Flair.
It's not fair to Flair.
Jerry Sags comes out number four. Gets eliminated pretty much right away, and Bulldog goes back at Flair. I like that.
Yep.
Haku comes out, and then, you know, Bulldog eventually takes him out too, and then we get Shawn Michaels at six. So it's Michaels, Flair, and Bulldog in the ring. So
that's a pretty good cool trio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Barbarian comes in, Texas Tornado comes in. A lot of people in the ring for a while here.
I did like when Tornado came in, Tornado and Flair went at it for a bit. And it just, it's like, you know, the Texas Stadium match.
Yeah, and I actually put that, like, oh, it's cool that they went right at each other, like, world class, you know? Repo Man comes in, Greg Valentine, Nikolai Volkoff. There are 10 people in the ring right now.
Yeah.
When Valentine gets in, they drop the classic, like, you know, it takes them 45 minutes to warm up. Little line, because, you know, he's got to go, like, an hour. And then it's the first, Heenan does such a great outburst on Monsoon. He just goes, shut up. Like, he's just, Heenan just, like, throughout this whole time is just in such a
Yeah. Rico Man takes out Volkoff. It kind of felt like they were setting up for, you know, one guy comes in and throws four or five people out, but they didn't do that.
No, it never happens.
Oh. You know. Boss Man comes in 13th. Pretty much everyone's just going after Flair, which, yeah, they identify him as the biggest threat in the ring, I guess.
Yeah, puts him over.
Repo Man eliminates Valentine, then Boss Man eliminates Repo Man. Bulldog gets Flair against the ropes, and Flair flips him over his head for the elimination. And then Flair does the same thing for Texas Tornado. And Shawn Michaels and Tito Santana take each other out, and there you go. Your ring is cleared.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And then Hercules comes out at number 14. He's about to eliminate Flair, but the Barbarian comes over and tosses Hercules over. Then Boss Man takes Barbarian out. So now we have Flair and the Boss Man.
Yeah.
So they go at it for a bit, and then 15th is Rowdy Roddy Piper, the new Intercontinental Champ. And then, you know, Piper and Flair brawling outside. Not fair to Flair.
Exactly. And then Piper just kind of gets back in the ring, gets him in a sleeper until Jake Roberts comes out.
Yeah.
And kind of goads Piper into attacking him. So, you know, good story.
No, that Jake. Yeah, that Jake part, though, is so great. Like, him just slithering in the ring and then just sitting in the corner. Like, just watching. Just let him. You guys go have at it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's just great psychology.
Yeah. Former Royal Rumble winner Hacksaw Jim Duggan comes out at 17. IRS enters 18. Jimmy Snuka comes out 19th. Jake tries to eliminate Flair, but Flair holds on. Undertaker comes out 20th, and it kind of sucks because they said on the Royal Rumble countdown that him and Hogan get anywhere from 20 to 30 since, you know, they were technically the byproduct of the vacated title, and then Undertaker gets 20.
Yeah.
Undertaker eliminates Jimmy Snuka right away, and then goes after Flair and chokes him in the corner. Randy Savage comes in, goes right after Jake. Undertaker steps in first, and then Savage finally gets Jake and throws him out, and then jumps over the top rope after him.
Yeah, so this was interesting. Like, I loved, so on Savage's entrance, because they were doing the split where they'd show the person coming out and they'd still have that overhead on the ring.
Yeah.
You could see Jake slither out and just hide outside of the ring, and then Savage go in and looking for him, and then he got beat up by Taker, and then he took advantage of him. Like, that was just great.
So just with Randy Savage, so the 1991 Royal Rumble, he leaves before the match because he doesn't want to get beat up by Warrior. And then 1992 does this. And then next year, he's in the final two and hits an elbow drop on Yokozuna and goes for the pin and gets eliminated this way.
Savage doesn't know the rules, I don't think. I don't know.
What is his deal?
That was the weirdest thing to me, too, because I was like, man, why is Taker just, like, going after him the whole time? Just let him leave. Like, he's eliminated. Like, what's going on? And it's, oh, Savage is supposed to do more stuff later on.
Yeah. Berserker's 22. Savage comes back in because, you know, they said he can come back in.
Yeah, commentary tried to cover him and said that you had to be thrown out by somebody else. You couldn't self-eliminate, apparently, but even though we have already had that happen in the past Rumbles.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
Virgil comes out, Colonel Mustafa, Rick Martel, Undertaker eliminates Mustafa, and then Hulk Hogan is here. Goes right after Flair and Undertaker, eliminates Berserker. Virgil and Hacksaw eliminate each other. You get Skinner, Sergeant Slaughter, Rick Martel eliminates Skinner, then Sid comes out 29th, and then the Warlord is number 30. That's underwhelming.
Yeah, very underwhelming.
Just a bit.
Hogan and Flair brawl around outside the ring a little bit. Sid eliminated Sergeant Slaughter with an Irish whip, which was cool.
It was.
IRS gets Roddy Piper over the top rope, but Piper pulls him over by the tie for his elimination. That was pretty cool. Sid and Hogan eliminate Warlord, then Sid eliminates Piper and Martel. We're down to Hogan, Flair, Sid, and Randy Savage. It's a pretty good final four.
Yeah, that's a pretty top-notch final four at the time.
Flair and Sid work together to take out Savage, and then Sid lets Hogan beat up Flair for a little bit, and then throws Hogan over when his back is turned, which is perfectly within the rules of a Royal Rumble match, but Hogan gets mad anyway.
Yeah.
He offers Sid a handshake and kind of holds Sid down while Flair throws him over the rope.
Yeah. So in my recollection of this whole thing, because I've watched the show plenty of times growing up, I always thought it was just Hogan, you know, holding on to the hand. Yeah. But he actually, like, goes and grabs him and tries to, like, pull him over, too. And I'm like, why is this guy a babyface? Like, why are people cheering this guy?
Well, that's the thing. Like, this was supposed to be a heel turn for Sid, and Hogan's big thing was helping Flair, who's a heel, eliminate Sid.
Yeah. I still get it.
Yeah.
It's not like Sid took him out, you know, in a dirty way.
No, he just threw him over the top.
Yeah, he went over it, like, come on.
Well, I think the idea was kind of so they could do Hogan against Flair. At least you have something there instead of just, you know, letting Flair eliminate him directly. But they don't do Hogan against Flair, so.
No.
You know.
I don't know. I think even at this point they knew they weren't going to do Hogan Flair. Like, I just think this is probably why they were doing Hogan Sid.
Well, I think if they were going to do Hogan against Flair, they means they would have gotten them to agree to a clean way to end the Rumble with them, probably. So they had to know, I would think.
Yeah.
Mean Gene is with Jack Tunney and Ric Flair. Jack Tunney presents Flair with the belt. Flair goes, with a tear in my eye, "This is the greatest moment of my life." Says it's the only title in the wrestling world that makes you number one. Heenan tells Flair he always believed in him. Mean Gene tells someone to put their cigarette out, which is great. Flair says he knows since he's on top of the WWF, everyone will be coming after him. That was it.
That was it. That was the 92 Rumble. You know, it's the show itself is whatever, but the Rumble itself is an all-time great edition of the Rumble.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think there's anyone who can deny that.
And just going back to the Observer from after the Rumble, Ric Flair became the first man to ever win the WWF and NWA titles. Yeah, you know. Those in the building said that Sid received a babyface reaction for turning on Hogan, and Hogan was heavily booed at the end of the show. So they were seeing it, too. They saw what we saw.
Yeah. I mean, the story is, I think Bruce Pritchard says it on his podcast, like, Sid would have been, I mean, they're going to put the title on him. At one point, like, he was going to be the babyface, he was going to be the next Hogan, but Sid always wanted to play heel, and I don't get that in a standpoint of business, because he would have made a ton of money being a babyface at this point.
Well, Sid's a weird guy.
I think it would have interfered with softball, probably.
Exactly. You can't just be top guy like that. So yeah, kind of like we talked about earlier, Bret Hart lost the title because, well, it actually wasn't directly because he was going to WCW, because by that point he wasn't going there anymore because he was getting ready to go and his contract had rolled over, so he still had like 6 months before he could leave, which obviously he doesn't leave. But yeah, he comes close to going and they wanted him to bring the Intercontinental title because Flair brought the other title to WWF TV, so, you know.
Which, that's stupid too, because, I mean, in Flair's defense, Flair brought it over because you wouldn't return his deposit either. Like, he actually had a deposit on the title. So if you're not going to give him his money back,
well, yeah,
he owns that until you give him back that money.
Exactly.
It's not like, you know, Brett owns that title.
Yeah. Let's see. Do we have anything else from the post show? No, I think that's it. I think we can move on to 1997.
We sure can. We sure can. 1997 Royal Rumble from the Alamo Dome in San Antonio.
And, you know, that in and of itself is a big thing because it's their first stadium show since WrestleMania 8. You know, well, Wembley, but their first American stadium show since WrestleMania 8. And, you know, it was a big thing. You know, wrestling's getting popular again. They wanted to, you know, kind of go up with WCW and kind of shed the small time thing, and not a better way to do it than trying to fill the Alamo Dome.
Yeah, and they did.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty cool. Obviously, it was cool when they went back there in
2017. Yes. And they filled it there too.
Yeah. And, you know, a big part of filling it this time was they kept kind of the ticket prices low. They had a partnership with Taco Bell where you're getting coupons for your tickets. So, you know, they did what they had to do to get people in there.
Agree. Agree. So, are there any observer readings here for this one?
Not till after.
Not till after. Okay. Well, then we can move on then to the beginning. We got a really cool intro video here. Mostly focused, however, on Shawn Michaels and Sid, who will be main eventing the show tonight, of course. And then we go into the Alamo Dome. Our hosts for the night are J.R. King and Vince McMahon. And we start off with Goldust versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley for the Intercontinental Championship. You know, Triple H wants Marlena and thinks that Goldust is a homosexual.
Yeah, that was focused on a lot in the Raw leading up to it.
Was focused on that a lot.
It's not good.
No, it's not.
Doesn't age well.
No.
No.
No, there's a lot of problematic Jerry Lawler, Goldust stuff from over the years.
You could have just said problematic and Jerry Lawler and could have left it at that.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true. Yeah, so Goldust ends up attacking Triple H on the ramp, and then they start the match, and then he goes back out and hits him with stairs, but didn't get disqualification because they're just kind of laying off the rules a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, that's a theme for the show.
Yeah. Todd Pettengill conducts an interview with a country superstar, Colin Ray, in the middle of the match.
Oh, this is another theme of the show, too.
Oh, forgot to mention, Triple H is with Mr. Hughes for, like, 3 weeks at this time.
So yeah.
Mr. Hughes involved. He throws Triple H the title, but Goldust gets it and hits Triple H with it, but Mr. Hughes pulls out Triple H at two, so he doesn't get pinned. So, good manager, and then he'll switch to China in a couple months.
Yeah.
Next month, actually.
Next month, yeah.
The final four. So Goldust argues with Mr. Hughes for a little bit, and Triple H comes from behind and hits Pedigree for the win. I mean, that's fine.
Yep. It was fine. Was what it was. Then we moved on to Ahmed Johnson versus Farooq. The video package mostly focused on Ahmed, how he there was something that he did in Kuwait.
Yeah,
he won the Kuwaiti Cup.
Won the Kuwaiti Cup and was there a breakout sensation.
Yeah.
Slammy winner. And then he had some kidney issues, which they put over to actually Farooq, you know, rupturing his kidney or whatever they said he did. So.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start off just kind of brawling, which I thought was nice.
Yeah. They were fighting.
Go right for it.
They were definitely fighting. This is the oldest iteration of the Nation of Domination. So, you know, you had PG-13 and Wolfie or whatever their names were.
Yeah.
On their way to the ring.
I thought it was cool. Ahmed caught Farooq off a dive and hit a power slam. That was always
good. Oh, yeah.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
Eventually, the Nation Domination swarms the ring, and Ahmed wins by disqualification, and Pearl River plunges one of them
into a table.
Yeah.
Notice, too, like, so they call the DQ eventually, but, like, 5 minutes before it, Farooq uses the chair in front of the referee. We're not going to call that one, though. We'll wait. And I like how, and they had to do this later on, too, but they had to use the French announce table. I'm assuming just because, like, I don't know, actually, because I was thinking, like, the Spanish announce table, you would have got a lot of use with pay-per-view buys, but, I mean, that would have been the case anyways. But they did use the French one and not the Spanish one, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. We move on to Undertaker against Vader. Undertaker's entrance features weird, like, wind noises.
Yeah, that was really strange.
Like it. So in the middle of this match, Todd Pettengill interviews a bunch of fans.
Oh, that was the worst, like, the worst cutaway too. Like, come on, what are we doing?
Yeah. Undertaker kicks out of a Vader bomb. Paul Bearer comes out. And Undertaker punches him. Undertaker tries to use the stairs to jump onto Vader and impales himself on the railing. And then Vader wins with a Vader bomb, and Paul Bearer is with Vader now. I don't know. I mean, I think Canadian Stampede match is better.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. This I really liked the first, like, 5 minutes. I thought this was the best match on the card. And then all of a sudden, it just, like, halted. Like, it just stopped. Like, they went so slow and just lost all my interest in it.
Yeah. Well, you know what I came to realize is this isn't a very good show.
No.
It's not. Especially relative to what they're going to end up doing in 1997. I know this is just the beginning of all that, but not a particularly good show top to bottom.
No.
I thought it was cool they did the Lucha match. Obviously got Super Astros either getting ready to start or having just started by this point, but
yep.
You know, I didn't really write anything about it.
No.
Oh, trust me, if you watched it, it was terrible, but it was... Yeah. It would have been a lot better if they would have just had, I think it was it Hector Garza?
Yeah.
And Heavy Metal? Like, if they would have just had a one-on-one match, it probably would have been fine. I don't know if you saw who was in one of the dark matches before the show, but it was Super Crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I did see that. Actually, it was, I didn't write down the three dark matches, but they were three more all, you know, Lucha matches, which is cool, you know, being in San Antonio. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. One of them was the, they showed it on the 97 Rumble, like, pre-show was what the minis match, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know one of the pre-show matches was also Paraguayo Jr., because Paraguayo was in the match on the main card, and that was kind of sad, because JR went out of his way to say how good he looked, and, you know. But, yeah, we can move to the Royal Rumble match.
Yes. So, we start off the Royal Rumble match with Crush and Ahmed Johnson. So going for the Ahmed versus Nation of Domination feud right away. Then Razor Ramon is number three. Ahmed eliminates him and then goes back to brawling with Crush. And then Ahmed had eliminated himself to go after Farouk. So he put Farouk over his chances of going to WrestleMania, which I guess furthers their feud, so it works here. And then we get Phineas Godwin. This is a terrible first four.
Yeah,
that's what I said.
Oh my god.
That's what I wrote down. I said who would start a match like this.
Yeah, and I knew Austin was coming eventually. I didn't know when it was, but he's definitely welcome when he shows up.
Yeah, he's actually next.
Yeah,
he's number five.
Yeah, and then Phineas gets Crush over the top rope, and Stone Cold stuns him and throws him out, so he's back to being in there by himself.
Here comes Bart Gunn. We were supposed to get after the Brawl for All.
Bart versus Austin would have been big. Could have played off this. Oh, man.
Well, and Austin eliminating him in 20 seconds is kind of weird, because this is right when Bart Gunn turned on Billy, so he was actually kind of heated up. And then they just had Austin throw him out immediately.
Then we get Jake Roberts at number seven. So some more storytelling there, of course, back from King of the Ring a few months prior. So they get into it. The British Bulldog is number eight, and Austin eliminates Jake as he's coming out. And they really put over the fact that British Bulldog had done well in Royal Rumbles past.
Yeah, they mentioned he was the runner-up 2 years ago, and he was in the final four last year. Like, that's pretty – he's one guy who goes pretty long, especially because the one 2 years prior, he was number two with Sean entry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number nine is Peroth. I think that was cool. You know, more luchas getting in there. Sultan is number 10.
I'm pretty sure Peroth, though, like, stiffed Bulldog – on one of the clotheslines. His Bulldog bumped real awkward, and he didn't look like he wanted to go down.
Yeah.
And I don't think that worked out for Perot going forward.
Oh, yeah. Sultan is number 10. Mil Mascaras is 11. Triple H is 12th. Bulldog eliminates the Sultan.
Owen I do want to say, too, like, at least leading up to, like, Mascaras, I thought got a good pop, especially when people could see who it was. So, like, I don't know if they just had terrible, like, if the acoustics in the whole building is just really off. Because, like, I mean, there's a few pops later for, like, the big stars, like Brett and Shawn later and Sid. But, like, Mascaras probably got the first big one, like, or, like, the first decent reaction, I'd say.
Yeah, and I don't, it must be acoustics because you, like, you listen on TV to the entrance music and it didn't really sound particularly, it was pretty faint most of the time, too. And
yeah.
So it's just such a big building, I guess. You know. Owen Hart accidentally eliminates Bulldog, who they're tag partners right now. And they, that leads to an argument. So a little tension there.
Yeah, a little tension there. Don't know where it's going to lead to, of course, but there's a little bit of tension there.
Yeah. Goldust is number 14. Cybernetico is 15. Mark Merrow is 16. And then the three Lucha guys take each other out, which, you know, it's fine.
Yep. And then Goldust eliminates Triple H.
I don't think Masker has actually, like, eliminated himself even. Like, no, he technically went through the ropes and then went up to the top.
Yeah. But
it's like he didn't come from in the ring to the out.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
See, Mascaras should have pulled the Axel gimmick. He could have had it, you know, 10 years prior.
Goldust eliminates Triple H, and then Latin Lover comes in. Owen Hart eliminates Goldust. Farouk is number 18 and eliminates Latin Lover. Ahmed comes out with, I don't know how to describe the piece of lumber he came out with, because
it's not a 2x4.
No, it's not a 2x4. It's like a full, like, plank.
It's like one of the ring planks.
It's like awkward for him to carry. That's how big it was.
It was awkward for him to carry, but he was still swinging it like he actually could.
Vince probably saw it and was just like, grab that big one.
Yeah, so he eliminates Farouk with that. Stone Cold eliminates Mark Merrow and Owen Hart, and he's all alone again.
He is.
Savio Vega comes out 19th, gets eliminated.
Jesse got more James, more storytelling there, of course.
Yes.
Mania 12.
Jesse James is 20th and gets eliminated. And then Bret Hart is 21.
Yeah.
And they go right at each other.
Austin's face here. Ah.
Yes. Jerry Lawler ends up being number 22, and Bret eliminates him right when he gets in the ring. Nice.
I love how he goes back to commentary like nothing happened. Like, I don't know if he's supposed to play off that he, like, forgot that he just got knocked out of the ring.
Oh, yeah. Diesel comes out 23rd. Terry Funk is number 24. Rocky Maivia is 25. We got the ring filling up again here. Mankind is 26. Flash Funk, Vader, Henry Godwin, Undertaker rounded out because no one gets eliminated in this time. Vader eliminates Flash Funk. I thought it was pretty cool. This is pretty much the only time that we ever see Rock and Brett do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Just, they have like one, do they have one match?
They
like
have
a DQ?
One match on Raw that ends in a DQ. Yeah. Like right after WrestleMania 13. But yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, it's one of those things like Rock and Shawn that we don't get a ton of chances to see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's definitely very cool to see.
Yeah, I thought it was cool to see, too, like, Rock and Austin when Rock made his entrance in, because they're the final two next year's
Rumble.
And, like, just to see where, you know, Austin's not getting that good of a – I mean, it's not that big of a reaction from the crowd, but, like, just to where he's going to be in, you know, even 3 months' time after Mania 13, and then where The Rock's going to be in a year. Like, it's just night and day.
Yeah. So Mankind eliminates Rocky Maivia and Terry Funk. Just not a cool way to treat your future tag team partners, man.
Yeah.
Undertaker eliminates Mankind. Bret throws Austin over the top, but the refs are trying to corral Mankind and Terry Funk, and Austin slides back in undetected. So
he's because the referees are handling the situation outside, and then boom.
Austin eliminates both Vader and Undertaker. Brett eliminates Diesel, and then Austin eliminates Brett immediately for the win. So Stone Cold is your winner, technically.
Yeah, Stone Cold is technically the winner.
And he will go on to receive a WWF Championship opportunity at WrestleMania. Well,
or maybe.
Yeah.
I love the ending, and I love how quick it is. Because from when the refs are dealing with Foley and Terry Funk on the outside, it's less than a minute to the ending.
Mm-hmm.
So like all in a minute, you have Austin eliminated, Austin coming back in, eliminating three other guys and winning the Rumble. Like, it's just great.
Yeah. And obviously that leads to Final Four, but you would think Diesel should be involved with Final Four since he was one of the Final Four. But he's not.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't eliminated by somebody who wasn't in the Rumble.
That's true.
That's why. That's where I'll go.
We talked about Final Four, I think, at the very beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah, very beginning. Very beginning. Yeah. Very beginning.
So, go back and listen to that.
Almost a year ago now.
Yeah, like, shit.
Yeah.
Thanks God.
Then we move on to our main event. Sid against Shawn Michaels for the WWF Championship.
Oh, one thing I just wanted to point out too, before, his Hart is so pissed at McMahon.
Oh yeah,
like he's going out there and talking to McMahon. McMahon has this line that I'm just like, what are you talking about? He says, Brett's unsportsmanlike conduct. And it's like the dude just got screwed. Like you talk about sportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah,
and I will say it's more like because they did it too with the Undertaker. Undertaker after he got hit with by Paul Bearer. Like, he even went up to Vince and everything. So this is more of them bringing in Vince, the owner, into the fold of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that Vince is the guy running everything, not the president of, not Gorilla Monsoon or, whoever they put in there.
Yeah. So, yeah, Sid against Shawn Michaels for the WWF title. Obviously, Sid almost killed Jose Lothario at Survivor Series.
Yes.
Michaels is from Texas. Those are the key points of the intro video here. They follow Michaels from the back, which I always enjoy. I think that's always good.
I think Shawn Michaels is a bit too long, though.
Yeah, a little bit.
Even Vince was like, this is a long walk.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know who approved of how long they had to go to the to get to there.
Yeah. Michaels had the flu, which is like when I went to an 11:30 Sunday Bucks game and Giannis had the flu. I assume it's the same type of flu. I think, no, Michaels was probably actually sick, but they really played up this flu thing quite a bit where it's like he's at home and was probably just partying with everyone.
Yeah, I was going to say black fluids from drinking the night before.
I like the Survivor Series match a lot more than this.
I don't know,
maybe Michaels was actually not feeling well and that brought this down, but this is just not particularly good.
No, it's not. It's not.
Earl Hebner takes a ref bump.
Take a drink. Take a shot. Yeah,
exactly. Sid goes for the choke slam and covers, but Hebner can't make a count. And then a new ref comes out and Michaels kicks out at two. Then Sid takes out the new ref and Jose Lothario, but Michaels had said with the camera. So a little turnabout from Survivor Series. Hebner finally crawls over and makes a count, but Sid kicks out at two. Then Michaels hits sweet chin music, and Hebner counts again, and this time Michaels wins and gets the title back in San Antonio. So that was cool.
Yeah, it was. It was very cool.
The crowd popped for it, so that's nice.
Yeah.
I will say, Sean's parents are no Stu and Helen when it comes to reaction shots.
No.
They were just there smiling. Like, yeah. It's a cool show. Yeah.
No, they didn't really get into it, but it's okay.
Also Sean takes a power bomb on the floor. Then he takes a choke slam in the ring and still kicks out at two. Come on.
Yeah, but they did end up pulling the second highest paid attendance in the history of pro wrestling from the show, so really showed that they could get into stadiums again and get these 60,000 seat buildings, and obviously keep with it. I'm pretty sure this is the night that they started to talk about WrestleMania being at the Astrodome someday too. I believe I've heard that story being part of this. So yeah. But that is about it, I think, unless you guys have anything more.
No. I liked the show going for, because we've done so many shows around it. Like, we did Survivor Series. You know, we did Final Four. We've done Canadian Stampede a few months after the show and everything. So I like filling in some of the gaps that we haven't hit on to see where everything landed.
Oh, yeah. No, because 1997 is, you know, it's so good and so transitional. It's cool to kind of be able to make a path like that.
And that about does it. I mean, if you guys have nothing else to add about the Rumbles.
No.
No, okay, I mean, well, I think that this, like, 92, the commentary and just the fact that it was for the title is, like, really, it's such a good Rumble to me. It's the first great Rumble. And then this one, I like the story. Like, it's like, to me, this one in 94, I like these for the story of, like, the ending. I like these types of endings. And I know it's something that you can become too over-reliant on and trying to do it, but I think they do a pretty good job of spacing these types of things out.
Yeah. So we will wrap this one up, and when we come back next week, we are doing
2000 and 2008,
there
right?
There we go, yeah.
Yeah. That is okay. What we ended up with. Okay, yeah, I wanted to make sure.
Because I know we cut one that we were going to do.
Yeah, we cut one that we were going to do because we were fine, because we wanted to add another one from this era, mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah.
So no 80s ones, though, because no, God help us all.
No, these are the two we did from this era. Then the next two are in the 2000s, and then the next two are in the 2010s.
Two all-timers at the Garden. I went to 50% of those.
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
Which was the 08 one. I was lucky enough to go to that one.
Yeah.
Boy, do I have some anecdotes for that one. Yeah. That's going to be fun to talk about.
Yeah.
All right.
Looking forward to that.
So, like we said, next time around, we'll be talking about the 2000 and 2008 Royal Rumbles, and you know, obviously we'll lead us out here. You can find me at Chris M. Novak. You can find Rob at Robert O'Neill 31. You can find Chris Osborne at Hitman 99. And if you want to subscribe to the Barber's Chair Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/barberschairnet. It's $5 per month for early access and everything else that you get through there. You can check out the network of podcasts on the Barber's Chair Network on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Spotify. New Ball Don't Lie recently went down. Of course, talking about the new trio in Brooklyn of KD, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving. The new 79th and Hallis went down as well. That, of course, would be
great. That was a great listen for all Packer fans out there. Go listen to 79th and
Hallis. Be commiserating after the dreadful press conference at Hallis Hall earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, new 2-minute drill recently dropped, of course, but after this weekend, a new one would probably come out. New Summer Sessions recently was dropped as well. That's one of the favorite podcasts on the network. You should check it out because it's hilarious. And then, of course, Ruthless Aggression will be coming at you soon, as always, as we head down the road to the Royal Rumble in 2021. Stay safe out there. Wear a mask. All that other shit. Don't be dumb. And we will be back with you next week to talk about 2000 and 2008. See you later.